When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Just as a reminder, this fall I will be on the road doing two seminars, one in Tennessee in Nashville, and as well as one in Netherlands in Europe. Can't wait to meet you guys. Can't wait to learn and grow with you guys and talk dog. So all the information and tickets are linked in the description below. This podcast is kind of with a bite history dog. She's gone after three people. She's a gigantic Anatolian Shepherd backyard breeder mix. So you can just imagine some of the things that they're dealing with, unfortunately, and they're doing all the right things by reaching out for help. And I think it's just a great podcast going over a realistic situation, a fair roadmap to what can you do with a dog like this? Why do these things happen? And is it too late? So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. I appreciate every single person out there listening. As always, the number one dog podcast in the world. Thank you guys so much. And I will talk to you next week. Bye.
How are you?
Good. I can hear what we're probably working on. If you guys want to fill me in on all your goals and expectations and all that fun stuff.
Sure. I can try.
Sure. So we have an 18-month-old Anatolian German Shepherd mix that has lately he's gotten extremely aggressive.
Is he fixed? No,
she's not yet.
She.
We were bringing her to be fixed, and she was in heat.
Ah, got it.
So it got scheduled till September.
Okay. So explain to me, when you say aggressive, what's that mean?
So she attempted to bite three people in the last week and a half.
Okay.
With a gentle leader on walking. She was actually sitting down right next to us, and she went after them unprovoked. Their backs were actually to her, didn't acknowledge her, didn't even pay her any mind, mm-hmm. And she proceeded to go after them.
Okay, and when she got there, what did that look like? Is it like, is she grabbing on? Is she, what does that look
she
like?
She didn't get to grab on. She reared up, jumping towards their shoulders and quickly readjusted and attempted to recorrect and tell her to quit it, leave it be, and try to bring her out of the situation and redirect her.
Okay. That's obviously the main focus, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll just start off with couple things. Let's start off with what, you know, why these things can happen, because it's like, okay, obviously what you're calling is like, how do we get that to never happen again? Well, we have to,
we have to dig into
it a little bit more. So, okay. it's a complex thing. First thing to discuss typically,
Tom, I think we lost you.
Okay. Hold on.
You there?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. Am I back?
Okay.
Yes, yeah,
great. So typically the process in which we start to kind of peel layers off this onion is why. And so did you lose me again? You good?
Yeah. In and out, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I took it off Wi-Fi. Let me try to put Wi-Fi back on. Hold on.
Okay.
Let me see if this helps. Yeah. Okay. How does this sound and look?
Better. Yeah. We're good.
Okay. Let's see if Wi-Fi helps out. So the first thing is genetics. So when you get a dog that's unprovoked attacking outside of me, my first line of defense is like, okay, we have to define attack, right? Because everybody's definition of that is commonly different. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first thing that you look at when a dog does an unprovoked aggressive behavior would be genetics, and what that looks like in a way that is easy to digest would be: do we have a history of being aggressive? Does mom or dad? And those are like the real big questions in the beginning. So let's talk about, did the dog, explain to me a little bit. I know you said you tried to pull the dog back. Do you feel like she was out for blood, or do you feel like she was just bored, or what was her intentions, do you think?
She's never done it before, so it kind of took me by surprise. The one person she actually latched onto them, mm-hmm. so didn't break skin or anything, but she did not stop until I removed her.
Okay. Was she growling?
Prior to it? No. But during it, growling and barking and coming at them.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So I would say, again, like, okay, good to know, good to clarify. Thank you. So genetics plays a role. Do you guys know mom and dad? Do you know their history? Or
no, she actually came from a backyard breeder, actually up by you.
Okay.
In the Albany area. We rescued her through Trina and Friends. We got her at 3 months old, approximately.
Okay.
We're not 100% sure of her birthday. And she had... we know dad was about 150 pounds and mom was 90, and there was about 10 dogs in the backyard that were removed.
Okay. So we don't really know much about that, so we can't focus on that. No. But yeah, let's just say it was we don't know. So that could be a thing. The other thing about genetics, outside of possibly poor genetics, is what are the two significant or the biggest significant things that both these breeds have in common, which would be being protective. And so then you talk about, okay, my job is to always try to figure out what the cause and triggers are in these situations. And sometimes it's, you know, it's not even reasonable or rational to try to do that. But I'm just thinking out loud here, where we could have had a protective situation where you guys are hanging out and this person gets too close, or you get too close, or whatever, and she fires off and says, "Hey, get the heck out of here. These are my family members." I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be the lowest hanging fruit that pops into my brain. Considering she's not showing these signs of aggressive behaviors towards you guys, I would assume.
Nope, right? No,
so typically, like, when we look at these situations, we're, from a dog training standpoint anyway, professional standpoint, I'm looking for neurological problems with the dog. So very, very unwarranted lashing out of aggressive behavior, biting, etc. Typically that is universal. It's not subjective. It's objective of, I don't care who it is, I'm just going to be weird now. I'm going to attack at random. But if it's with random people, then that doesn't really pinpoint that to me, because that's what these types of situations are, like little investigations, and you have to go through the processes and try to figure out what's at the end. So that's what I would just say. Just the first thing is, if it was a neurological, and it still could be, it's just when we talk about neurological, almost like a something that is involuntary and you can't control, these are typically going to be across the board, like, yeah, she growled at me for the first time, or she went after me, or she gave me the side eye, or whatever. But because that's not happening, it could have been a situation where she felt threatened or she felt like she had to protect or whatever. And again, you know, Anatolian Shepherds are no joke. They don't make great pets because of how, and you know, unless you live on a farm and you have livestock and your dog is going to war with coyotes and wolves and other things, then sure, it's the best dog for you, right? But then you mix in, you know, another German Shepherd breed, and then you mix in, obviously, probably unethical situations where it's like, let's make some money. Here's a dog, here's a dog, let's make him big and scary, and people buy him. And nine times out of 10, those dogs end up in the shelter anyway, and so here we are. So what to do moving forward? I would say the most important thing is safety, obviously, and that goes without being said, but I think safety is number one. I also think with a dog of this size and this magnitude, it's very, 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 very important that when she does make these decisions to try to hurt somebody, which ultimately is deadly for her.
Yeah.
Because it could kill her at any moment. You know, she bites the wrong person or she really gets a hold of somebody. God forbid somebody gets hurt, but then also she's probably going to die. So it's very, very important for you guys to let her know that when she does these types of behaviors that it is not okay and she gets punished for it. And typically in these situations, because it's fast and it happens so quickly, dog owners don't have an opportunity to actually correct the behavior when it happens. And so therefore, the dog actually still doesn't know what they did was wrong. And that's why it could be continuing to happen, right? So you're standing there minding your own business. All of a sudden, your 100-pound plus dog goes and goes after somebody, and you're just pulling back. And you're like, whoa, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, we're not really correcting the behavior in the moment. And so she's kind of like fired up, but it's not clear to her that what she just did was wrong. So that's very important. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll talk about that more granularly in a moment, but so that's like the bulk here is going to be that. Obviously, you know, you can tell with her sounding off right now, without. It sounds to me somebody's trying to break into your house when I know that that's not the case. You know, it's like
she's always like this. Yeah.
Yeah. So that tells me insecure, nervy, vocal, protective. Right. That kind of like a perfect blend of what you're seeing. So to me, it's not surprising that you have a backyard breeding mixed, gigantic, shepherd, mixed shepherd. Extremely protective, extremely, resource guarding. That's their job. That's their purpose. That's it. And so what you're seeing isn't surprising considering the genetics of the dog. Even if you said top of the line German Shepherd, top of the line Anatolian or top of the line, any type of those big, big dogs, it just wouldn't surprise me that she's barking at everything. And so here's the other thing. Okay. So here's what I think is I think that she is maturing. Is this when you were bringing her to get fixed, was this her first or second heat?
We believe it was her first.
Yeah.
We haven't seen any signs.
Okay. So that probably, that makes sense. So bigger dogs, it's common for them to fully mature later on in life. Just like with the males, I have a Borble, same thing. He's probably not going to sexually mature until he's, I don't even know, but he's not even close. So, and he's 8 months. So totally normal for these things to also start happening. These types of behaviors to start happening when the dog starts to become big, bad, and scary in their head. So you kind of see the dogs start to, and I've done for my career, my profession, and my expertise, as well as owning a dog very similar to what you have in a sense of big, scary, unbelievably strong and protective. I've done an incredible amount of research, and you know, once they fully mature, you just have to make sure you have a good thumb on them. You have to make sure that when you tell them, hey, absolutely not, that it matters. And I think, to be honest with you, that's really important for any dog. I don't care if you have a puppy shih tzu or, you know, a Tibetan Mastiff. It's like you got to make sure that once they start to become teenagers, right, where they start going, I want to do stuff on my own. Get away from me, mom and dad. I'm going to kind of feel myself out a little bit. I'll protect the house. I'll go on my own. Then you start to get, hey, knock it off. I got this. And then you get this kind of conflicting, what do you mean? No, I got this. And that's very, very common for these large protective guardian breeds, because essentially, you know, through their bloodlines, well, don't know about your dogs, but just essentially when the breed is created, especially these Anatolians, these Tibetans, Borbols, these very protective dog, these livestock dogs, they are essentially supposed to be brave enough to fight off lions, tigers, and bears in their sleep. That's literally what they're supposed to be doing, right? And so you kind of, you know, mess with the bull. You get the horn sometimes on these dogs where you're like, hey, I have this big, giant, scary dog that's supposed to be protective over everything that's all of a sudden going after people. And to me, it's like, okay, let's backtrack a little bit. How much control do we have? How much obedience do we have? How much time is went in with training? Typically 9.5 times out of 10, people don't put enough training in with the dogs that they need to in order to get a good outcome. So essentially, to me, the recipe that you guys are, you know, kind of have cooking in the cauldron here makes total sense. Hey, we got this backyard breeder, big shepherd, fully went into sexual maturity, done some training, but, you know, won't listen to us all the time. Then you start to get these unpredictable things where you're out and your dog goes, shoop, and you're like, whoa, where'd that come from? So, I think what you should do is with a dog, so you have a big, large, scary, protective dog, period, right? Doesn't matter how nice they are. It's just a big dog. When they turn on, they're like linebackers. It's not like a Jack Russell Terrier getting all fired up. It's like, no, this is a dog that can, you know, pull you down if they wanted to, right? So you have to start really focusing and pulling back a little bit, pulling back the curtains a little bit on your overall obedience. And your obedience is your communication. I talk about this religiously all the time because it's the most important aspect to developing a good dog, a stable dog, a dog that's going to listen to you no matter what the circumstances are. And so it doesn't matter if you have the most aggressive dog or the happiest dog in the world. It's going to be very challenging and almost annoying to have that dog if you don't have good communication. You know, so I think that that's the first thing is, again, the situations that had happened, I don't know all the context, but one of them, most of them were unpredictable and random. Okay, so there's two things to that. Could it have happened because your dog is unstable and decided to be a jerk? Sure. Could it have happened because the lack of foundation and lack of leadership in the very early on stages of a dog that needs it the most is not there? And then the dog felt insecure, nervous, and protective and lashed out. Yes. Also, regardless, the idea comes back down to what do we do about this? And I think it's more about control and communication. And what I mean by control, I mean your ability to tell your dog to do something without this grand liaison like thing, right? So put it this way: you guys go out and go for a walk. You go out to get ice cream, whatever the heck you do in the summer, right? And put your dog into a down. A, like, do you have that? And B, once the dog goes into a down, like, how good is that threshold? Like, how good is the dog actually going to listen to that down when somebody comes over and grabs a napkin or somebody crosses the road or something when you're in a heel? So again, it doesn't, there's two flips to the coin here is yes, of course it matters to what your dog's intentions are, but here's what I see for most dog owners is they have a dog that they can't communicate with and they can't control. And if the dog is friendly, happy-go-lucky, people don't do shit about it. They don't care because worst case scenario is they get pulled and it's kind of annoying. The other thing is if your dog is the opposite of that, where they're aggressive and mean or reactive and nervous, whatever, it's the same thing. They don't have the skill sets to handle that dog regardless of how aggressive or how nice they are. So if you said, hey, here's our dog. She's absolutely wonderful. We've had zero issues with her. She sleeps with kids and sleeps with puppies every night. She's the best. And you came in and I said, put her into a sit. She might go, meh, meh. So here's what you should do. When you're out with her, consider the muzzle first. Muzzle's a great tool to, I was in the vet, I just saw one. I was like, great, this guy has a muzzle. Good for him. I think the muzzle has a bad rep. I think people just assume that we slap a muzzle on a dog if they're trying to eat everybody. I think the muzzle is a safety precaution. It's not something that you guys necessarily have to do. I'm just starting to say you guys are starting to see aggressive behavior. Let's get ahead of it. Where if you're going to be in tight spaces, like, you know, you go to, you don't have to wear it when you're going on a walk or whatever, but maybe you're going to go to the vet or you're going to start to train in realistic situations where there's going to be people around downtown. Like, these are things I would want to do. If you came to me, I would say start conditioning the muzzle so I can take the leash and walk away and get to work. Right. So that means muzzle, string cheese, peanut butter, treats at the end, doing that for a couple weeks. That thing comes out and she goes, let me put my face in there. Perfect. That way, when you strap it on and you move about, she's not as freaked out. If you just try to force it on with that big of a dog, it's going to be hellacious. So that's just an idea of, we're starting to see things we don't like. She can overpower us and it's unpredictable. First line of defense would be a muzzle. So that way, if she does do any mistake again out of your, obviously, control, nobody gets hurt and you have more information. It's more for the bank. Yeah. Second to that would be making sure that your foundation and your communication foundation is set, which means, and personally, I think every dog should have this, but that's not always the case because dogs, people just don't train their dogs unless there's huge problems, which is sad to me because training your dog is essentially giving them the ability to communicate with you, which is huge, right? So anyway, starting off with making sure you have really good communication relationship, especially with a big dog, it's very, very crucial. When you say heel, dog can't pass your legs. When you say down, dog can't get up till you release. When you say place or bed, same thing. When you say leave it, same thing. And you can hear my Borble upstairs probably barking at my other dog to get out. But I'm in the same boat with you guys in the sense of big, protective, pushy dogs for sure. So I totally understand what you guys are saying. And I've had big dogs my whole adult life. I've had big 150, 200 pound dogs. So anyway, that communication and control. If you guys came in to me tomorrow and you hired me to work with me in person, and you said, Tom, here's our dog. She's gone after a couple people. I would say, okay, let's put her into a sit. And typically this is what it looks like with all the dogs that I work with. Okay, sit. And then the dog, if they sit, it's like a 50-50 chance. If the dog sits, it's going to be for 2 seconds. Once the dog realizes they're not getting food, they go down, whoop, they're right back up, wagging their tail like, what? And then, so that's a problem. Because when you tell your dog to do something, it shouldn't be an option. And again, I personally think having this discipline with dogs, in my opinion, should be mandatory for all dogs. It's not just a big scary dog. It should be with puppies and happy-go-lucky dogs. It's for safety. Like, I want you to down. I want you to stay because there's cars. I want you to heal because I don't want to get dragged. I want you to come back because I don't want you to get hurt. I mean, these are non-negotiables to me. But it's basic. I mean, it's come back when I call you, sit when I ask you to sit, down when I ask you down, stay, leave it, etc. And I think a lot of people have like a even 5 to 10% of these things. They can do it under the perfect scenario, right? Where it's... there's nothing else going on. They're hungry, they're motivated, and everything kind of lines up and the dog will do it. And that's fine in the beginning stages, but not in reality, especially when you guys have the caliber dog you do. You should have a very well-trained, hyper-alert, hypersensitive dog to your verbal cues. Down, sit, things like that. So those are really important because I know you guys are like, why is this happening? What do we do? How do we handle this? And I'm just telling you from a consulting standpoint, the first thing you have to do is when you go out, because this is what's going to accumulate. If you go out into public places, if you have the muzzle, that's a win. But it's not going to, it may not stop your dog from lunging at people, because emotionally you guys are going to be in the same place. Stressed, overwhelmed, sad, mad, frustrated, like, oh, that still happened. You know, the muzzle was on, so, you know, nobody went to the hospital or nobody, you know, is hurt, yeah. Right? But still, right. It's going to damage your guys' trust with this dog, which leads me to the next thing, that throughout the process in which you are developing the communicational skills necessary to control your dog is going to come a great deal of discipline and boundaries. So for an example, if I put your dog on a leash right now and I said, sit, and she didn't, I would use my leash to correct her and hold her accountable for not sitting for two reasons. A, many reasons, but the two big reasons: she knows the behavior well. She heard what I asked her. She decided to say, I'm not doing it for you. Go screw yourself. I see a squirrel. I see a bird. I see another dog. I'd rather not. Okay. And that's a big deal, because she's basically opting out of it's like anything else in the world. Employees, hey, I need you here at 9 tomorrow to open up the shop, okay, so we can do business. They show in at 10, 8:30, or 9:30, whatever. These are non-negotiables. Like, I'm telling you, this is what you have to do, and it's like I'm in charge of this situation, right? It's the same thing with parenting. All right, we just pulled up to Disneyland. You're going to hold my hand. We're going to go in together. You're not going to run across the busy parking lot. Like, these are non-negotiables, right? And it's not because we want a robot dog. It's because we care about our dogs enough to make sure that they understand discipline and boundaries. And so think about it in the micro and the macro. The micro is dog sit. The dog says no. You go, oh, my dog actually didn't sit. Whoopsie days, what big of a deal that is. The problem is, and the macro is your dog is accustomed to literally blowing you off. When you tell your dog to do something and they don't want to do it, and they flip you off and they're like, I'm not doing it. So the bigger problem is, especially with the dog that you have, is confidence, huge confidence issues, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to do this for you. I'm not going to do it. I deal with this with people all the time in my life. Is they say, hey, I'll be there at 10. Like, okay, I show up at 10. Oh, sorry, I had to cancel today. And they do it three or four times in a month. The fourth time, the fifth time, the sixth time, I'm going to go with somebody else because I know that you're not going to be there, right? And it could be your haircut. It could be anything, right? I'm just saying, my point is my confidence with that person is really iffy because you cancel so many times on me, right?
Right.
It's like the weatherman saying it's going to be bright and sunny all day, and every single day he says that it rains. And you're like, I don't really trust this guy anymore, right?
Yeah.
So that's my point, is when you tell a dog to sit and they go, I don't want to, I'd rather look at the squirrel or the other person, and you don't have the ability to hold them accountable for that, that's where you can start getting what you guys might be dealing with, which is very common, which is more protective and aggressive behavior because of the lack of leadership that you guys are either disclosing or not with the dog, which essentially means, hey, I want you to sit. The dog says no. You say, okay, I'm just going to ask you again or whatever. We'll just not do it until later. The dog's like, man, I can get away with anything.
That was easy, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was easy. But what happens is when push comes to shove, when there's an altercation in your dog's head, they're going, I got this, because you guys definitely, you've proven,
you don't have it.
Exactly. You've proven to me over and over and over again that you don't got anything. If I don't want, it's the same thing with human relations, right? A substitute teacher comes in, you know, within the first 8 seconds, whether you're watching a movie or you're picking up where you left off with your normal teacher, right? Like that. They're going to come in, they're going to say, get your books out, this page 68. I know where you guys left off. Little Timmy up front, you start. Everyone's like, oh crap, they're business as usual, right? But if you let them manipulate you and take advantage of you.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. That's where, so I'm giving you this information because this is the common thing that happens in your situation. The symptoms that you guys are dealing with are typically created because of the things I'm saying. So if you're thinking in your head, when I ask my dog to do something, it's not mandatory and it's questionable that she'll even do it. That's the first place to start. And with such a big dog, you have to also make sure, this is another important piece, you have to make sure that your accountability action means something to your dog. Okay. It's very, very important, which means if you tell your dog to sit and they don't, and you go, oh, well, worst case scenario is I'm just going to ask you again. Or, which I've seen, it's I'll ask you again and then I'll get food out for you. And the dog's like, they're like, pay up, clean your room, pay up, do your homework, pay up. It's like, no, 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 no. That's not how this works. Sit down, right? So the correction that you use, and a correction is to, there's many definitions of it, but a correction in this context is essentially to hold the dog accountable when you ask the dog to do a behavior they know well and they flip you off and they go, I'm not doing it. And then they get a correction. So that way, so they'll say, oh, you're in charge. I mean, this is like classic in movies and TV shows where all of a sudden the person that's the underdog and isn't winning the race, if you will, all of a sudden starts to come back and people respect them. And it's this big thing, right? It's the same thing with dogmanship. Yeah. Where you tell a dog to sit, and before you, basically you got bullied and picked on, and the dog rolled their eyes and said, get out of here. But then you wanted to, then you wanted the dog to listen to you, and they're like, we don't do, I don't listen to you. Like, this isn't, so that's something that you guys have to really work on, because I always tell people, if you have the most aggressive dog in the world, you can do anything if you have good control. You can still go out, you can still be around people. Heel down, sit, stay, place, leave it. The dog listens to everything you say and you can manage that. It's like cars, right? Like you can drive a car down the road perfectly fine like we do every day, or you can drive it into a ditch, but that's on you. So you have to make sure that you're navigating this dog appropriately. But the first things you have to work on is basic foundation. So for an example, your dog jumps on, your giant dog jumps on somebody's shoulders or back, and we basically pull them back, you know, to them, it's kind of like, tis, 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 don't do that again. And so when they think back on it, they're like, I'm just going to do that again. Like, why not? You know? So that's just like the blunt end of everything. Like for an example right now, my 8-month-old Borble is, I have a sauna outside of my backyard and we have like towels and stuff, and he tries to get into those things, and I use an e-collar that has a vibrate on it, just like your cell phone. It goes bzzz, like this. So I kind of just sit there and watch him, because he's being a puppy. He's just being a brat kind of. He's like, oh, I'm going to mess around with this. So my point is I'll do that. I'll be inside at my table working and I'll see him grab a towel or a hat and I'll go bzzz, and he'll get off and he'll look around. And then he goes and lays down and he doesn't do it anymore. Okay. But here's my point. And this is just one piece of context here. Mm-hmm. If I used that pager and he continued to rip the towel off, I wouldn't be using it anymore. I'd find something else that he actually cared about. But when I hit that pager and that vibrate, he hits the deck and go and completely avoids that towel and doesn't do it again and goes and lays down. Perfect. Great. That's exactly what I wanted you to do. You're not going to rip the towel off the wall and take the screw out of the wall and chew on it, rip it up and ruin the towel, right? The moment you start doing that, the dog gets down. I hold him accountable. I say, you can't do that's inappropriate. I don't want you to do that. But my main point with that is if he just continued to push through that buzz, I wouldn't be using it anymore. Okay. And I feel like with such a giant dog, if they're coming up and you're not really correcting them for it and holding them accountable for it, it's going to keep happening. And it's kind of like this cycle where sometimes because of the lack of punishment in those situations, I've seen that also be the reason why it continues to happen. Where same thing with pulling on the leash. The dog pulls, we pull back. The dog pulls, we pull back. And I show people a video of people healing their dogs. Like, I don't understand why my dog's pulling me. And I go, look, why not? You're playing tug of war. They have no idea how to heal because you've never introduced it. And you're not communicating with them clearly that when they cross the line and start pulling you that it's wrong. So what questions do you have on all of that?
In regards to the corrections, we actually do have your e-collar. It's actually charging right now. When we put it on, should it be on all day long in the correction or only when we're training?
Great.
Or is training now all day?
Well, I think I know what you mean by training, and I think it means just like selective, hey, I'm going to get the dog out and train. And that's going to be in rounds throughout the day. It's not going to be any. So to answer your question, you can leave the e-collar on for the day. I just typically will like move it around the dog's neck. It's kind of like me sitting in this seat. I've been in this seat for the last 2 hours and I'm like getting antsy on over here, you know? So it's, yeah, just move around a little bit. So you can leave the e-collar on. It's suggested to leave the e-collar on, especially in the introduction of the e-collar. Because you don't, you put it on, and so you don't want to say e-collar's on. Now we're training you because the e-collar is something that is going to be universal. That it's just an enforcement and reinforcement to your voice. So I would leave it on throughout the day. Take it off at night. That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then with walking, stop. Put her in a heel. If she doesn't, lifting the leash. We would then correct with a vibrate?
No, I think the vibrate will probably be too much. I think the vibrate would be very warranted for any aggressive behavior. Shut that down. Kind of like the towels for me. It's like my biggest pet peeve with my dog right now. I mean, so you're that's where that would come into place. I think like if she does something wrong, you would use the pager. Okay. It's kind of like, but it's the pager is much, 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 much different than the stimulation. People don't really understand that the low level stimulation, especially with the e-collars that we're using, my e-collar, the low level stimulation is apples to oranges with the vibration. Low level stimulation is like, hello, sir. Can I please have a sit? Thank you very much. And the vibration is like holy crap, Metallica blaring. It's very, 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 very different. And so the low level stimulation is going to be conditioning the dog to your voice from a distance, replacing the leash with the collar. So now you have an off leash tool that allows you to communicate off leash. That's what the low level stimulation is. And then the pager or any corrective level from the remote collar is going to be stop what you're doing right now. You've made a mistake. Change it. Okay. Change what you're doing. Get back in position. Get off this person. Come back when called. So just make sure that when you guys are introducing the remote collar, you're following along with either my course or my videos that I've put out, which there's many. And essentially, and it's good that you have the e-collar, but I would say to go back to your question, you absolutely can use the remote collar in conjunction with the heel work that you're doing typically you want the e-collar to be introduced before we use it as a correction. But essentially, personally, with a dog that size, I would be doing leash work with the prong and e-collar work with the off-leash work because she's so big. And that's personally would be my formula. And then because the power. And then eventually what you would end up doing is just replacing the e-collar in the beginning is the introduction phase. Hey, this is me. 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 You know, it's like the first email we ever sent. How do you do this? Right. And then now we're like blasting emails everywhere all the time. Right. So it's like once she understands that the remote collar is you guys, then you can pretty much do a lot more with it. But I would just say for tuning up your basics, so I would say let's not use the remote collar to recondition the obedience. Let's just make it very easy because that's a wireless thing. Make it analog. Let's make it really, really easy. Let's put the leash on. Let's put the prong collar on and let's just work on some basics. Sit. She doesn't sit. Hold up on the leash. She puts her butt on the ground. Good sit. You hold 10 seconds. Okay, break. And you keep doing that. Again, you can certainly do that with the remote collar. I just feel like the remote collar and the way that I always introduce it and the way that it is injected into my training philosophy and ethos is the kind of like the polishing last finishing touches. Typically the remote collar is kind of like this polishing everything up, right? Making everything shiny and perfect off leash. And I would just suggest scaling. You can still use it, still introduce it. I would but on the basics, I would scale back to just the leash and maybe a prong and just start working on the basics down, place, sit, stay, thresholds at the door, and holding the dog accountable with just the leash and the collar at that point. Because it's really, really important like that you matter. Like when you tell her no, you want her to go, oops, not ask me again. Like that's like you really want that. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So is there a potential that this behavior will go away with her getting spayed?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. There's also a potential of it getting worse.
Yeah.
There's no information out there that's consistent that tells us otherwise. The only thing that we know is they can't reproduce. You know, and with males, it takes away literally all of their testosterone. So there's really no guarantee of what it's going to do. Could make her calmer. But I would just say, gun to head type thing, and you said, what do you think is happening? I would say she's a dog without she's a dog that doesn't have the amount of structure and discipline needed for this dog. And she is vulnerable and insecure when there's people around, which in the house, she's barking constantly. Like she's in a state of fear. I don't know what to do. She's pointing back at you. They don't know what to do. What do we do? And that's just how I see this all like clockwork, you guys. Like same thing when you see my reactive German Shepherd videos on YouTube where a dog comes in and they're, and I take the leash and I go, stop. And they go, and they melt. And they go, okay. So they didn't mean it. They didn't, there's actually a dog, I can't remember the video, but big, big, big brindle mastiff and was unbelievably protective over mom and would come after me with the muzzle and really be nasty. And I just took the leash and walked away and she just took a deep breath and laid down and was like, oh, I don't care about you really. I'm just protective. So it happens like clockwork, you guys, like where these big protective breeds go through life without the right leadership. I'm not saying that you've done nothing. And most of the time, dog owners put in a lot of work. They just don't do the right work. You know, they work on the things that are not going to like shake or roll over. And it's like none of that is going to matter. You know, like your dog needs to respect you. And when you say leave it or come or sit, your dog needs to take it seriously because, you know, everyone thinks it's funny when dogs don't listen. I'm like, but it could be deadly. I mean, your dog can get seriously hurt if they laugh at you. When your dog gets off leash and you say come and they think it's a game, I'm like, that's not funny. And now you guys are, you know, dealing and barking up the wrong tree a little bit in the other situation. But yeah, it could get better, could get worse. Big thing for you guys is getting back down to the basics and really ask yourself, okay, the behavioral problem is an advanced problem, okay? You have to ask yourself and really audit and look at your relationship internally and say, okay, we need to work on this advanced problem, okay, like fifth grade level. And do we really know how to get past first grade right now to get to fifth grade? Like, that's where you guys are at, where, again, if you came to me and you said, hey, our dog has gone after three people, you would assume, oh, Tom's just going to recreate the scenario and the dog's going to go after him and we're going to work on it. First thing I would do is, oh, your dog has gone after three people, put your dog into a sit, and the dog doesn't sit. And I'm like, boom, bingo. That's all I needed to see. I don't care if your dog is killed, mauled, attacked, kissed, licked, or done CPR to a person and you want to get rid of it. If you can't put your dog into a sit for more than 5 seconds, you're not going to accomplish your goals. And furthermore, it's probably the reason why your dog is doing the external symptomatic behaviors you want to get rid of in the first place, is because of the lack of foundation. The lack of communication is what spirals these symptoms from it's like having a terrible immune system and constantly getting sick. And you're like, I have a cold, I have a fever. I'm like, but these are all symptoms of what? Your immune system. You need to attack the core of the problem, which is your immune system, right? So you really need to get back down to let's put it this way, very rarely with people with behavioral problems, they come to me and they have a really obedient dog. Very rarely. And in fact, I don't remember a time that maybe one or two military dogs that are just bred to be killers. You know, we want that type of dog going into the houses with gang members trying to shank them, shoot them. They're like, I'm going to kill you faster. Those are the type of dogs that have, but that's not what you want. It's not what you have. So, so I would just say, let's say you worked on the basics. Your dog respected you. Your dog realized that there's accountability that they care about, a correction that they cared about if they decided to flip you off. Then you would start going out into reality and you'd start working on these things. And you just use people, right? Just walk around, put your dog into a sit, pay your dog with some food, keep moving. The other thing that you guys can start with, which is very, very, very easy to do, is your basic thresholds, okay? And it's very easy. And it's also a good window for you guys to look through to see, where are we at? And what you do, and you may or may not be doing this already, but you just test your dog. So what that looks like in, let's just for an easy example, is you go to the door and you have your dog on a leash and you go to the door and you say, stay, and you walk through. Your dog is supposed to stay right there until you release the dog on your cue. You say, break. That is like or put your dog into a sit, take a piece of food, throw it on the ground. Boom. If they get up or if they walk through that door, like these are very, 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 very basic principles of thresholds. Stay right here. And we use the door because the door has a symbol for the dog of, we're going through that. So it's kind of a test, right? Mm-hmm. We're going through that door. And so you walk up, stay or sit or whatever, and you walk through. And if your dog is like, I'm going with you, that right there tells you everything you need to know about anything. Because you can't say, Tom, I want my dog to stop lunging and biting people or barking at people. Where I'm like, well, you at home, you guys can't even get your dog to not run through a threshold without, you know. So that's what I want you guys to really focus on, is that's the way I see these situations. And I, fortunately enough in my life, get to travel the world and do this for a living. And it's like clockwork, you guys, with these situations. It's dogs come in with these problems just like you guys have. And okay. Same thing. So threshold would be, put your dog into a sit. They sit. I throw a piece of food up. They're up. And I'm like, so you told your dog to do something, and the moment that they were disinterested, they're gone. And that tells me everything I need to know. So those are some basic things. Other things you could do if your dog is crated is open the crate door. You can't come out until I release you. So making sure you have that break command, that free command. And really, you want your voice to matter. You know, again, it's like kids. Like, my son just walks away and I'm like, Banks, get back here. And he just completely zones me out. I'm like, that's a problem. That's dangerous. And it's different with kids, but with dogs, they live a much shorter life. And, you know, you have to, there's less patience with dogs than with humans, because dogs don't live to 100 or 80 or even 50. So anyway, so that's where you guys have to start working on, is put your dog on a leash tonight after this call and audit where you're at. Okay, let's go to the sliding glass door in the back. Let's tell our dog to stay and see how long it takes us to get our dog to one of you is on one side, the dog is on the other, and they're sitting there looking at you like, can I go now? And you say, break, and they go through. And you do it again, you do it again, and then you do it with other doors. Any threshold that you can think of. The car door, your bedroom door, anything that your dog's like, I'm going to, you say, wait until I give you permission. You know, it's like kids in class when they don't ask to be, okay, can I go to the bathroom or whatever? They just get up and walk out of the class. And you're like, whoa, what's going on here? So the other thing, again, you could do with food. So again, put your dog into a sit, put your dog into a down, put your dog into a place, throw kibble and treats on the ground and see what your dog does. And what you want is your dog to look at you and go, and then you say, break, and then your dog goes. That is not only impulse control of, I know what you want to do, but you can't have until I release you. But it's also good leadership skills. If I was standing in that room, I would go, your dog respects you, your dog listens to you, and you have control over this situation clearly. You threw a slab of steak out, treats, beef liver, kibble, whatever, and your dog looked at you directly in the eyes and says, please let me know and I can have it. And you said, break, and they did it. And that's clear communication. So that way, you do that over the next week, your dog starts to get in more into the back seat instead of the driver's seat. And then you start going out. And things that I would be doing, putting my dog on a leash and testing and being ready, especially if you have the prong collar or even the e-collar and your dog just, you see three people walking, perfect, down, stay, sit, stay. You hold and you're safely in the range. Like you're not like, you know, using them as bait, but you're using them as a test where you're sitting there and then the people pass and you pay the dog. Good. And if not, you correct the dog, because likely, again, like with me and my dog and the towel and stuff, I could never, now he's old enough for the remote collar. So it's beautiful because I can just sit here and watch him. And if he does something, I can just tune him up. Nope, not that. Not that either. Not that either. Mm-hmm. Yep. Now you can, that's your bone. That's your treat. You can do whatever you want with that. So I think the timing for you guys is also really crucial.
Real quick, if you need to give me an example of a punishment if they don't do what we're telling them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, what does that look like?
Yeah, great question. In the beginning, it's going to be on your leash. So for an example, I tell a dog, let's just say a flat collar. Everyone has that. Sit, put the dogs into a sit, and then 10 seconds later, because there's a fly running through the room, they get up. You pop the collar up. And you're basically trying to abruptly say, hey, snap out of it. What am I, chopped liver? Pay attention. Sit. Right? That's a correction. So you're just clarifying, nope, inappropriate, wrong way. Right? You're driving, rumble strip, back over. Right? It's correcting you. And then what you need to do is correct yourself to go, oh, I'm going in the ditch. So with the dog, sit. Put their butt on the ground. They go, ooh, piece of candy. They break the sit without your permission. You correct them. That is not only good for your obviously obedience, but it's monumental to your relationship. Do you want to ask your dog to do something and for them to opt out at any time that's convenient for them? No. Do your homework. I'm done tonight. Two questions. I'm good. Yeah. Okay. Do your dishes. Oh, no, I'm just going to do a fork. I'll go to your room for 20 minutes. No, I'm going to go for five. Like, these are things that we can see in human behavior. It's very similar with dogs, where when we ask you to do something and they just do it on their terms, they become bratty, they become frustrated, they become protective. So that's what that would look like with the correction. That's why I recommended, with such a big dog, pretty much anything over 80 pounds, you should be using the prong collar, because it's going to be safer for your dog to understand what you're asking. It's going to be easier for you to communicate that as well. I think I have prong collars on my website. I definitely have safety clips on my website as well, which you'll need if you have a prong collar. But essentially, that's what that can look like for for your dog is same thing. Like, but you can do it tonight on a flat collar. So you just pop that collar, you pop the leash. Great video that you can look up tonight on my YouTube channel. If you looked up, you can just go to my YouTube and search. Actually, it's probably just the number one video on it. Just if you search, how to use a prong collar, my video will probably pop up. Okay. And that goes over leash corrections really, granularly, because it's crucial that you do that right. Because if you don't, you're gonna be wasting your time. Because you might be saying, "Tom, I'm correcting, I'm still not our dog." And I was like, "Yeah, but you're doing it wrong." You know, so you're doing the whole, you're going the wrong way. you're showing up, but you're not doing it right. And so I would definitely recommend looking into that, because that's going to give you very specific, granular information on how to use your leash and how to use your collar, and make sure that it has action and make sure your timing's down. And essentially the way that it works is, you know, you have your leash like this. This is the dog. This is you. Okay. It's nice and loose like this. There's a little hang here in the leash. Let's say you ask your dog to sit. They go into a sit. The moment they get up, you're popping this collar like this, okay? What happens typically, especially for like heel work and stuff, is the dog is already at the end of the leash. The leash is taut. You can't correct because you have no momentum. You're pulling.
Right.
Right? So you want to come out, pop, pop, like that. So you're trying to get the dog's attention instead of pull back on them. Because once the dog has already put the pressure on the leash or the collar, it's disabled. You can't use it then, unless you want to drag the dog away, which is ineffective. I would much rather have the dog make the decision to go, "I'm going to make a decision." You know, you're not trying to pull them away. You're trying to correct them and annoy them and correct them into a better position, right? Anyway.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
So it's a lot. I mean, you guys have a lot to do. I would just say that's the blunt end of where you need to start. Again, I think if you just have a dog that's making these decisions, but you don't have good control or good obedience or good communication, that's the first place you need to start. And then once you get really advanced in your obedience and you start getting really good control and your dog listens to everything you say and you're still having problems, then that's another conversation. But I think right now the easiest fix here is to, "Tom, we have a behavioral problem with our dog and we don't have good communication or control." I'm like, okay, let's start there.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else?
Mm-hmm.
Back of the car, kind of.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So when the dog's in the back of the car, we have her kind of secured to like just in it while she's in the back, but she will go absolutely crazy for like anyone who's outside the car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that also a function of like her being protective of us, or is it a...
It's a protective thing. It's a vulnerability thing. She's stuck in a steel crate, basically, you know, in your car. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's a protective thing. And I think it's just important, again, like it, to me, like my Borble will bark at people outside of my house, which I don't mind. That's why I got him, to be honest with you. Like, but again, it's, we're not going to be able to tell this fish not to swim here, right? A big protective guardianship dog in the back is barking at people that are strangers around your car. Like, and you have to put it into perspective too. I think that that's important, where you're just in Target parking lot and somebody's walking by with a cart ready to go in. Your dog's like, "We're under attack," you know, like they don't realize, you know, so you might be thinking like, "Oh, this is so annoying." But to them, they're like, "Error, you know, code red here, like we're under attack." And so it comes down to, again, your ability to say, "Hey, leave it, knock it off, disengage." But you guys don't have that, right? So
and so
that's where that comes in. Like with my dog, again, like when he gets up and starts barking out the window, I'm not gonna say, "Hey, don't bark." I'm gonna say, "Come," takes him away from the window, "Lay down and stay." That'll counter it. And then I would use a "leave it" if we continued to bark. But be really mindful of what you're asking. Your dog is in the way back protecting their car, protecting your car against a stranger. I don't, you know, I don't know for sure, but like in my opinion, in most cases, she's like, I'm just doing my job. I'm just alerting and letting you know that there's a stranger. And, you know, it's kind of like sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't even see that person. Like, it's kind of a good thing. So I think it comes down to the control of what does your voice mean to your dog? You're sit, you're down, you're leave it, you're stays. So if you, again, if you don't have that and you turn around and go, hey, knock it off. She's like, again, I don't listen to you. We don't have that practice. You know, it's not like, let's say you're in the military, right? And your sergeant is there and you're very militant. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. I mean, to the T's, to the nines. And then you see that person out for dinner. It's not like you're going to change. It's not like you're going to be like, oh, hey, what's up, Sarge? How's it going, bro? It's like, sir, good to see you, sir, right? It's the same exact thing, right? Yeah. So when you're at home and your dog's like, meh, get out of here, people. I don't listen to you. I'm going to do what I want, right? And then when you go out, it's the same thing, right? But at home, if you're like, hey, quit the crap, and they're like, yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. Got it. Sorry. My bad, right? It's going to be the same at, you know, wherever you go. So I think it's just important to my point is the universal ability to just say something to your dog to say, hey, disengage, stop. And your dog goes, got it. Like, it might be hard. It's a hard task, especially because she's already hitting this maturity. She's already 18 months. She's already been doing this her whole life or her whole adult life probably. It's like, it's, you know, it's, you got to go backwards. And so it's just, I just want you to, so in the car, it's kind of the same thing where it's like, I want my dog to stop doing this. I'm like, okay, well, you know, again, what's your reputation like with your dog? How well does your dog listen to you? And you're like, oh, well, depends. You know, if I have a snack in my hand and there's nothing else going on, great. I'm like, okay, well, that's not it. Right.
Right.
So, okay. So yeah. So I, you know, my answer would be, you know, kind of getting back down to the basics of communication and groundwork of how well, you know, it's just like anything else. I just put it in the perspective of, you know, the friend and the family member that you can trust. You just, oh, I know who I can count on for that. They'll be here. They'll show up. It's just like that dependence of they're going to listen. And it's a practice thing. It's something earned too, right? It's like, again, it's the same thing with trust on both ends of the spectrum. Somebody says, I'll be there at 10, and they're there at 10 every time. There's no reason for you not to trust that person, right? But then if somebody's like, I'll be there at 10 and they're late every single time, you don't trust them. So you got to build up this reputation with your dog as well, and this relationship with this dog and this trust with this dog that when you say, hey, leave it, that it's in their best interest to leave it because you have that leadership skills. And right now your dog is like, oh, we're under attack. I'll protect everybody. Get in the back. You know, and it's like this commando scene and you're like, hey, no, we're good. They're like, she's like, the freak, we are good. Get out of here.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
So, so it's just a lot. That's just the low hanging fruit. That's the first things you guys have to start working on is developing better relationship, developing better communication, more confidence, and more discipline in with this dog that desperately needs it. And then from there, you can build from that.
Okay. Cool.
I appreciate it. Great. Right, thank you.
You're
thanks
welcome.
So much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck with everything.
Thanks. Thank
you. All right. Bye guys.
See you soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.